PSNY. My heart is still racing. I don't know about yours.
You know, I was actually surprisingly calm at the end of it. I think after the Rizzo RBI single, I was kind of just like, all right, they got this in the bag.
Yeah.
I thought that was the only calm.
Very calming. Very calming indeed. Anyway, what is happening, loyal listeners? This is Bleacher Creatures episode 146 with me, Josh Benjamin, and Alec Montecalvo. Brought to you, as always, by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and, as always, Rivercrest NYC. Alec, hard-fought five games. It's absolute marathon of a series. The group chat got ugly at some points, and now we get to go to Houston tomorrow and do it all over again for a third time.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. I'm really not. I'm glad we won.
Like,
but
what Yankees fan is actually looking forward to the series, seriously?
I don't know. But like
masochists.
Yeah, masochists, sick people. look, I'm happy that they won. Shame on the MLB for having this scheduling fiasco and that,
yeah,
that no matter who won was going to have to play this marathon of the first round and go straight to Houston to play. But in a sense, I am glad it's us that has to go through that. And yeah, I'm not looking forward to Houston. I'm so tired of them.
I'm like, look, I don't expect the Yankees to win the series. I don't expect them to beat Houston at all. Let's just put that out there right now. Even though Houston is not the same team that they were in previous years, they're not as much of an offensive monster anymore. That pitching is still really good. Game one, Jameson Taillon's going to face Justin Verlander. Now, yeah, could Verlander have a bad game? Sure. But Jameson Taillon, he doesn't have a lot of put-away pitches. He pitches a lot to contact. I wouldn't be surprised if the Astros kind of came together and said, okay, let's just dink and dunk our way to a win. And then Severino game two, okay, maybe that's a good bounce-back game. I'll give the Yankees this much credit because ALCS, it's still 2-3-2, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's 2-3-2. There's just no travel day between games five and six. Right, okay.
Yeah.
So all that being said, I've gone from thinking, okay, the Yankees are gonna get swept by the Astros to, okay, they might be able to stretch it to six games.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna get swept. I think they'll at least win a game at the stadium.
Yeah,
I'm kind of looking at five or six games. You kind of said it. I don't have that much faith in Taillon going in game one. Houston's all about that pitching, but I mean, every Yankee fan has a reason to fear Jose Altuve just because what he's personally done to them. But you know,
they're going to start chanting "fuck Altuve," right?
Oh yeah, I know, and it's just, you know, you can chant it when it's game seven and the Yankees are an out away and up by 10. I don't know, like that's the only time when it will be acceptable. but the big guy that scares me is Alvarez. I mean,
Yordan Alvarez scares me more than David Ortiz. And David Ortiz scared the living shit out of me.
In the league.
What was that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just saying, like, you know, Alvarez is a premier power hitter in the league. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he probably is going to be up there on the Ortiz level of just, like, any moment he can launch a ball into the stratosphere.
Just think, like, he already is such a good hitter without the shift. When the shift is gone next, or with the shift, when the shift is gone next year, Yordan Alvarez, Jose Ramirez, all these lefty hitters who are getting shifted on constantly, you're going to see an uptick in offense. They're probably going to hit like well over 300. Ramirez especially. Speaking of Jose Ramirez, he played well in the ALDS. Still a very quiet series.
Yeah, I thought the Yankees did a really good job of keeping him quiet. I mean, how many hits did he have where he beat the shift the other way? Just fisting balls off to the left side. Like,
yeah.
To the point where it was really freaking annoying.
Yeah.
But
no thanks, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Yes. But hey, you take that from their probably most dangerous hitter. I'll tell you what, though. Stephen Kwan annoys the shit out of me now.
Stephen, I tweeted this out, and Allison Case, who the former host of the show, big friend of the show, we got to have her on soon. Allison Case shared my sentiment in this. Stephen Kwan is Sean Figgins. For the younger listeners out there, Sean Figgins was a switch-hitting infielder, could play the outfield here and there for the prime Mike Socha Anaheim Angels. And this guy, he was just pure contact hitter, speed for days. And Stephen Kwan, he's not as good a hitter as Sean Figgins was in his prime, not yet at least, but he's still that same hitting prototype, just pure contact, tough to strike out, draws a lot of walks. Like, you try so hard to cheat him, and he just doesn't let you. Like, yeah. He just sees the ball incredibly well.
Yeah, it really is. Like, with the stuff that pitchers have nowadays, it is really impressive. I mean, he was doing it against, you know, lefty-lefty against Cortez. He was doing it against Cole. He was doing it against Loaiza. Like, he was doing it against every single pitcher that the Yankees threw at him. He just controlled the strike zone really well, and it just seemed every game you're starting off with a hit. I was like, oh god. And I was like, I was afraid that Cleveland was going to come out just swinging early today and jump out to an early lead. But you know what, credit to Nasty Nestor, he was short rest, he was dominant.
Remind me, have you watched Ted Lasso?
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole is Roy Kent, Nestor Cortez is Sam Albisania. Tell me.
Good one.
Yeah, and Oswaldo Cabrera is Donnie Rojas, because baseball is life.
Fair, yeah.
Cabrera, he didn't have like a ton of good at bats this series, but you could tell like he's a gamer, dude.
Oh yeah,
he's so good.
He's a kid in his first postseason. I think today was his roughest outing at the plate. It looked like he was trying to press a little too much, trying to like be the guy when he expanded the zone, got out of his approach and whatnot. But yeah, he's a dude you want like he's got a future as a big leaguer, whether that's an everyday player or a utility dude who plays, you know, 3 out of 5 days. Like, he's a guy you want on the team. And a part of me says, you know, screw it. I want to see an infield next year of Cabrera at third, Volpe at short, and Peraza at second, or the other way around, like whoever. But I just want to see all three of those kids in the lineup doing whatever.
Let's do some quick post-game highlights from the clubhouse celebration for those who were able to see it on YES Network. There's not only a champagne celebration, they got a disco ball now.
Oh, do they really?
the lights are out. Not like a disco ball, but you can tell like the lights are out. They got one of those, you know, like little rainbow balls that like rotates, all those different lights. Like saw them at all your friends' bar mitzvahs when you were like 14 or younger. Yeah, 13. I don't know how old people are. All right, so first highlight. Gleyber Torres said the Yankees thought Josh Naylor rocking the baby was disrespectful. Revenge, he said. Now they can watch on TV. That's from Brian Hoke at MLB.com. Gleyber Torres, it's like I don't know. I feel like Gleyber realizes his time in the Bronx might be up soon, so he's just going out and ripping it every day.
Yeah, I mean, mad respect, going scorched earth. I can't say that I agree with him. Is what Josh Naylor did stupid? Yeah, in a sense, just because, like,
especially because he hit the home run, they were still losing.
Yeah, and like, but it's not even just that. It's just, it's a weird way to showboat. Like, it doesn't have a lot of swag to it, I gotta say. Not that I'm the authority on swag, but like, it's just, it's a weird thing to celebrate. And then, and just as, you know, vigorously as he was celebrating when he hit the home run, I never took it as like a disrespect to the Yankees specifically or Gerrit Cole, you know, because I think Naylor said that he does it, or anytime he hits a home run off of someone, he says to his teammate, like,
that's my son. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my son.
Tristan McKenzie said that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's dumb. Because, like, look, I like when young players have fun and they create some life. Yeah. Another part of me is kind of just like act like you've been there. And just the way he was running around, it kind of reminded me of Major League with Pedro Serrano with the you know, with the acting like he's got the two big balls.
As oh, yeah.
He's doing it to the dugout. It was just like a really awkward motion in how he was running. And look, Gerrit Cole responded. Gerrit Cole shut his ass down in the last time they faced off against each other. And then
you got to hand it to Naylor, though. Today against, I think it was Lo Isaac, when he just lined that shot right up the middle and right to Cabrera. The crowd's doing the whole, you know, Pedro Martinez sequel. Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? And you could see on Naylor's face the look he gave. He was like, all right, you guys got me. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, well, I deserve this.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think – I'm interested to see if they interview him in the post-game stuff today. But, you know, I don't think he meant anything by it as, like, you know, fuck Gerrit Cole, fuck the Yankees. But, like, I don't know. I'm glad to see that the Yankee fans created a hostile environment to, you know, get them off their edge or get them on edge. So it made for good television, and
it did.
That's what you want.
How about Wandy Peralta in this series, man?
You know, either him or Harrison Bader get MVP of the ALDS.
Oh, I'd give it to Peralta hands down because he threw he had an even 3 ERA and was just unbelievably good. Now, granted, Clay Holmes is the all-star closer, but Wandy's pitching the ninth. A lot of it has to do with the matchups. You got Naylor and Jimenez coming up, so you want to play that game. But I don't know, just with how much he embraces those high-pressure moments and with so many injury concerns around Holmes, I wouldn't be surprised if, especially against the Astros, going with someone who's got not just a great sinker and a changeup, but elite command of them, Peralta might be the closer the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, it will be interesting. And I just wonder how much of it's maybe there isn't we're at the time where there's some fluidity between all the arms and the pen, that there doesn't need to be a designated closer per se, but just who's the best guy to get these next three outs, kind of like what you said on the matchup with Naylor and Jimenez. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, do you go – I imagine Peralta is going to get a lot of matchups with Alvarez and what's his face?
Kyle Tucker.
Tucker, yeah. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It really will be, especially because when you consider in the ALCS, we're probably going to have Ron Marinaccio and Frankie Montas coming out of that bullpen too.
Will we?
Yeah, Marinaccio threw a side session before the weather hit. Montas, they've been saying he could come back, but probably more as an opener or a piggyback guy, just because you don't want to mess with the shoulder, especially with someone like him.
Especially since you got team control.
Yeah. Meredith Marakovich also tweeted out that DJ LeMahieu was seen with a suitcase to Houston.
Hmm.
Okay. So that could be an X factor going forward too, because Boone said he probably could have gone in the ALDS, but he just wasn't there. Now LeMahieu's a gamer. He's he's only not playing because we saw it ourselves. He was useless. He was of zero use.
He was hitting on one leg.
Yeah. And so Boone, being an ex infielder and one who was definitely more of a contact hitter than he was a power guy, even though he did swing the bat fairly well for a couple of years, you have to figure he sees something in the mechanics along with Dylan Lawson where it's can he play? Yes. Should he? No. If he's going against Houston and he's at his best, Alec, that's a game changer.
Absolutely. I mean, all those guys you mentioned, especially LeMahieu and Marinaccio, those are two big crucial pieces that's going to help fortify this team in what's going to end up being a dogfight, I think.
You might even see Marinaccio go up against Alvarez with that that changeup that dominates lefties. I mean, we saw Tommy Canley do that for several years.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's It is very intriguing to think about, you know, having those guys coming back at this time. I mean, fingers crossed. It's, I'm not, this is going to be the stuff of nightmares, I feel like, just because, you know, these are demons that need to be exercised. And
Yeah.
And, you know,
Now
I don't know if this is going to be the year to do it.
Here's a question. Which I, oh, did I just forget what this question was? Oh, okay, yeah. After game three, I had this weird feeling. I was kind of being defeatist. I was saying to my wife, nah, we're gonna lose tonight. The bats just aren't there. That was like a momentum sapper, even with Gerrit Cole. Like, he's gotta be so perfect. He needs so much run support. And she goes, No, Yankees in five, Yankees in five. Did you feel some weird sense of calm the moment we scored first in game four and then Cole just kind of did the rest?
You know, I can't say that I did. It was just kind of one of those things where, you know, cool, off on the right foot, but there's just so much more left to play. Like, I felt calmer today when Stanton hit the home run than probably what happened in game four. I don't know if that's because, like, maybe I just subconsciously have more faith in Cortez than I do in Cole, which I don't know how fair that is, but we do know that Gerrit Cole is susceptible to that big inning.
Yeah.
So I knew, like, even if the Yankees are up 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, that a guy like Cole can give that back pretty quickly. And I think there was like one inning where Cleveland started to push the envelope a little bit. And I think I might've messaged the group saying, oh, here comes the big inning. And
yeah,
thankfully he, you know, controlled it.
Quick interjection. This is from Pete Caldera. Ron Marinaccio says, I'll be good to go if they call me for Yanks ALCS roster.
Perfect.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, but you were saying about Cole, like, yeah, he is susceptible to that big inning because he does like that fuck you fastball. But you could see in game four, yeah, he used the fastball a bit in game one, but game four, he was all about that knuckle curve. That, oh God, it was just dancing into the zone.
Yeah, that, and I think he used it a lot in game one too, which was really nice to see because, yeah, it's interesting. You look at a lot of the hitters in Cleveland, it seems like they tried to cheat high and hard stuff and had a hard time with the low off-speed pitches. That was kind of like, you know, one thing that made me think about it was a Carpenter at bat today against whatever his name is, Karinchak or...
Yeah, James Karinchak.
You know, that's an interesting matchup because Carpenter is a very tall hitter. He doesn't get into his legs as much.
Yeah, it's easy to forget just how big a guy Matt Carpenter is.
Yeah. And his, like, is sometimes he'll golf one. But, you know, if a guy like Karinchak has a really sharp breaking ball and he makes it look like it's a fastball at knee high, you know, Carpenter is not going to be able to adjust to that and get under the ball and lift it. I feel like that was an issue for Cleveland hitters against Cole in game four and game one when Cole really leaned into that knuckle curve. And like you said, it was gorgeous. It was a dandy.
This was an interesting stat from the series because in terms of pure base hits, Cleveland out-hit the Yankees by a very wide margin. I think it was something like 44-28, something like that. And yet, three players on Cleveland's roster, three players hit home runs in five games. None of them were Jose Ramirez. You had Stephen Kwan, Amed Rosario, and Josh Naylor. Three total home runs in five games. The rest they tried to bloop and blast their way to victories. It just goes to show, yeah, small ball is great. You love to see a team hit parades and parades of base hits. Home runs win the games.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it shows that it's really hard to string together four or five hits in a row. Like, yeah. Really hard. And, yeah, power reigns supreme.
Oh, now, even so, I still think that this Indians core is a young, bright future. Stephen Kwan's going to be their leadoff man again just next year. Andrés Giménez, you know he's going to build off of his career season. Josh Naylor, he's very good. Oscar Gonzalez is going to be really good.
Yeah.
So
I think It'll be interesting to see where they can kind of maybe sprinkle in some more power. And maybe it's the kids, quote unquote, are going to develop that power as they get older. Yeah, I mean, they are a scrappy team. And I mean that in the most like respectful way possible, because they do kind of harken back to that old school style where it's high batting averages, not as high OPSs, but guys who are going to string together a few hits here and there. It's
and
just,
not strike out.
Yeah, and they hardly strike out. And it's just a matter of they can get one or two bats that can supplement a little power. And you know, I don't know how many guys on that Cleveland team hit 25 or more home runs.
Well,
but...
Naylor had 20, but he also only played in 122 games. So you have to figure in a full season, he's going to be good for about 25 to 30.
Yeah. So maybe like one more guy or one of those aforementioned names can develop that power. I'm like, they got the pitching and they got the pen. I mean, and you know what? I thought Karinchak was not that good. I think their best reliever was that Stefan
kid. Yeah, one of our ex guys.
Yeah, he was carving up the Yankees all series.
He looked really good. Cal Quantrill even looked really good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost twice, but like we beat Cal Quantrill. We didn't necessarily beat up on him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you just do enough to get him out of the game. And
yeah.
That's all that matters. It's like you try to prevent that starter from giving a quality start, and you do that in either bombarding him or death by a thousand cuts.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Yankees now go in up against the Astros, just backtracking there, because they just plays like much like the Guardians, the Astros pitching staff behind Verlander, it's very young. You got Framber Valdez, you got Lance McCullers Jr., you got Christian Javier. And they also even though they swept the Mariners kind of took them to the mat. Like game three, 18 inning marathon. That's two. They played two games.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, it's Seattle didn't win any games and Yordan Alvarez won maybe two. I think Seattle did a pretty good job of exposing, as you were saying, that this Houston lineup is not the same as it's been in years past. The question is, can the Yankees pitching replicate what Seattle pitching did? And you just kind of hope that a more experienced Yankees offense can maybe expose that pitching side. While you say that the Houston pitching is young, you know, there is still experience on that team. You know, Framber Valdez has postseason experience. He was there in 2020 and 2021.
How many innings did he throw this year total in the regular season?
He threw 201 innings.
All right. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So that's three gamers and Christian Javier, who was the winning pitcher in a no hitter against the Yankees this season. So the key to victory then, as good as Houston's pitching staff is, and their lineup too, because Altuve is still Altuve, Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, those guys are bangers. Jeremy Pena is probably the American League Rookie of the Year. The key,
you think he's done enough to get it past Julio?
Oh yeah, that's true. Always forget Julio. Okay, well, Jeremy Pena. So you got Stephen Kwan, Julio Rodriguez, and Jeremy Pena. Those are, in no particular order, those are your top three for Rookie of the Year. Julio's going to win, then the other two are going to finish behind him, two and three in some order.
Yeah.
The key for the Yankees then, don't get caught up in the noise. It's clear. We saw in six games against the Astros this year, there's something about this team where there was a mental block and all of a sudden they reverted to trying to change the game with one swing, beat Houston at their own game. Not anymore. Don't do that. You want to beat this pitching staff? You've got to take the fight to them. Look what the Mariners did to Justin Verlander. He didn't get out of the fourth inning. I don't even think he got out of the third inning.
Yeah.
Ryan Pressly doesn't pitch well against the Yankees. He's their supposed star closer. This is a winnable series. I think Houston takes it in six, but I have a very hard time believing that the Yankees are going to go in there and they're chop meat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be one of those things where the Yankees might lose in six and the scores don't reflect how close of a series it probably was.
You mean any time the Yankees have played the Rays for the last 5 years?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you hope that the guys who have been here on the Yankees team and have been knocked out by Houston are going to come into this with an edge.
Yeah.
And a chip on their shoulder, but still kind of, you know, like I really liked what I saw from Gleyber Torres this series. I hope he doesn't let the moment get too big for him in the ALCS where he tries to do too much. Like, it's going to be overlooked, but him just working a leadoff walk.
What a great opening at bat that was.
Yeah, it's just like you know, Savali threw some like decent curveballs low in the zone, and Gleyber saw it and laid off.
I think that's, speaking of Aaron Savali, we talk so much about Mike Mussina's adage about how 10 starts with everything, 10 starts with nothing, 10 where you improvise. Savali, it was very clear this outing. He had the curveball working, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Like yeah. You and Jordan Montgomery said, like, you cannot pitch and rely on your curveball.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, a hitter is going to be able to eliminate the fastball, which sounds crazy, and just sit on that curveball.
Especially when it sounds like the only fastball that Savali throws is an average two seamer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So So gamer series from the Yankees. I think, like, sorry Yankees Twitter, Aaron Boone is not getting fired this year. He's gonna finish out this contract at the minimum at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to close on a sour note, but can we talk for a second about just how okay, I want to preface this by saying there was clearly no malicious intent behind this. He was frustrated, he was just kind of venting. It's not a great look for Brian Cashman to call the fans customers in that post-rainout quote yesterday. You know what I'm talking about?
I actually did not see that.
Okay. Oh, here. I have my phone here. Let me pull up what he actually said. Because, again, it was not – he wasn't being an ass about it. He was literally just venting and upset about the rainout taking forever to be called. Okay, here it is. A lot of people were forced to wait through some bad weather, Cashman said. And for that, we're sorry. I don't wish that on our fans ever. Nobody wants to have their customers struggle through that type of stuff. We all thought we were playing tonight, I can tell you that. Now, technically speaking, yes, fans are customers. Yeah. But there's going to be that small pocket of Yankees Twitter who takes that comment way out of context and says, yeah, my cat's weighing in on this too. They're going to say, oh, like Brian Cashman views the Yankees as a business. He cares about the bottom line, not about winning. Results aside, that comment, slip of the tongue, it's the guy's got to go, dude. It's time. It's time for a new face.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I even wrote, win or lose, he has to go.
Yeah, yeah, you did. And, you know, it's you can't measure just how much he's contributed to this team or just to the organization. And for that, there's a lot of, like, you're going to respect him a lot. But, yeah, he just seems a step behind in terms of analyzing talent. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's just like, you know.
I don't know if it's so much a step behind. I think he's just kind of prioritizing the wrong thing. Because, look, I'll give Isaiah Conner-Fell for credit where it's due. He does not strike out a lot. He knows how to foul some pitches off when there's two strikes. He's sneaky good at runners in scoring position. But as a defensive shortstop, he's so feast or famine, and yet out he goes night after night, trying to get, like, making more mistakes, sometimes having good nights, when Ozzie Cabrera and Oswald Peraza are down in AAA.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
like, what are, well, you, I think
my bigger criticism is just how he handles prospects.
Yes, because the prospect hugging is very frustrating, yes. Because
there doesn't seem to be a clear end goal when it comes to developing the prospects. Because you have guys who look like they're who are performing at AAA, but you yo-yo them between AAA and the majors, where, of course, they're not going to be productive hitters. Because, you know, as a young hitter and having to, not knowing how long you're going to be in Manhattan versus if you got to go to Scranton. Like, yeah, that's a lot of outside noise that's going to like permeate into what you're trying to do as a ball player.
And Scranton's, and so, Scranton's not exactly close to the city either. It's
Scranton's not even close to Philadelphia where I am.
Yeah, because I think there is an actual bus from New York to the Scranton area. I think with no traffic, it's maybe 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So, I mean, like, you know, you wonder if things would have gone differently with a Clint Frazier or with a Miguel and Duhar if Cashman had just given voted confidences, you know? And I get it. Yeah. Like, you know, it is a bit of a business, and as the Yankees, you're expected to compete and win. But, like, you know, I'm not saying Miguel and Duhar is going to end up being, like, you know, the biggest what if in recent memory for the Yankees. It's just like, you know, the dude hit 290 and came in second place of Rookie of the Year to Shohei Ohtani. Like,
yeah, he did.
Like, why not give him an extended run? And regardless if he fails or not, like, I don't mind a prospect failing if they're given ample time, you know? Because it doesn't make sense to me why hitters or players like Aaron Hicks, which, you know, again, like, it's terrible to see him get hurt. You don't want to see that happen. But why guys like Hicks or Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or Josh Donaldson?
Speaking of Hicks, we have an injury update on him. He said that from Brian Hoke, Aaron Hicks' knee said that his season is over. I'm extremely disappointed. It's something special. I wanted to be a part of it. Estimated recovery time is 6 weeks. So, okay. So it looks like, yeah, he had an MRI, CT scan, wasn't good. Didn't know the exact diagnosis. So it sounds like, I'm guessing it's like maybe a torn MCL. Or maybe just like a grade 2 sprain.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It didn't seem like it was going to be a knee injury. I thought he just got like gouged by Cabrera's cleat on his leg. So
no, you could tell like when they knocked knees together, the Hicks caught the business end of it. Gotcha. It was like right on the outer joint.
Hmm.
Well, the good news is this probably means that he'll be easier to trade in the offseason because I think he's going to be gone, right?
Like, he should be. Like, he really should be. There's no reason why valuable reps should go to a Hicks or a Marwin Gonzalez or, you know, whoever. When you got kids in the lineup or kids who are trying to fight for a lineup and, you know, you want to talk about trying to find young, controllable, cheap talent, well, how about you give the shot to the people who are in your system, right? Next year, the outfield needs to be, and not even next year, this next postseason, you could argue that the outfield needs to be Cabrera, Bader, and Judge. Call up Peraza. If you don't have faith in IKF at shortstop, maybe call up Peraza and see what he can do.
Yeah, agreed. Maybe Volpe's going to be ready next year. You never know.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, that's part of the rant about the whole Brian Cashman thing. It's, you don't know what his game plan is for young talent. He seems to have a very short leash for the kids and yet an incredibly illogically long leash for players who just have not been getting it done for the last few years.
I'm going to use this terminology, and I think you'll appreciate it when it comes to Brian Cashman and his approach to developing prospects. It's almost like he waits himself to death.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, how long is Esteban Florial supposed to be in the truth when, okay, yeah, he had a great year in the minors this year. You look at the strikeout rate, the OPS, the on base, and how, okay, you have to account for the regression in batting average coming up to the majors. Okay, he's Joey Gallo. All right, you wasted all this time waiting on Esteban Florial, and now you have Joey Gallo, who you just traded away.
I'm not even convinced he's like a Joey Gallo. If we just give him the time and the reps, he might figure it out. But, like, let's just see. Like, give him a month. Run him a month of every day at bats.
And if he doesn't, you have to figure that next season, assuming Hicks is gone, because Harrison Bader's the starting center fielder next year. That's just a fact. But I think you have to figure if Hicks is gone, that means that Esteban Florial, unless he's moved in one of those magic offseason trades, and that's assuming Cashman comes back on a new contract, Florial might be in the mix for everyday left field at bats.
Yeah. Like, Here's a very good example, I think, of guys who have shown glimpses and flashes, but for whatever reason, you never give them the extended run to prove themselves.
Right.
Tyro Estrada. Remember Tyro?
Oh, yeah. Tyro hits one to Cairo.
Yeah, so he played 140 games with San Francisco this year.
Yep.
And he hit 260 with 14 home runs.
Did he really?
In San Francisco.
And the Giants want to go after Trey Turner?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, oh my God. Trey Turner might hit 330 in that stadium, but that's a different story. But, like, that's the point I mean, is, like, you had these guys who show these flashes of being solid contributors at the major league level, and you just don't give them the shot. You trade them away for nothing, and then they become productive for someone else. It's like, if you're looking for young, controllable, cheap talent, give them an opportunity.
Yeah, and I get, going back to IKF and how Cashman approaches him, I get that, oh, defense is important, but you need to, there's utility to analytics. Feel for the game sometimes has to matter more. And now that the shift is gone, you need to rethink entirely how you do your defense. It's not about like the shift anymore. It's about, okay, who can go a long way on both sides, even if it's an ugly DRS. Yeah, we're going to see a drop in DRS in the next few years. Just watch, because no shift means a new look at defense. And again, I don't think Brian Cashman makes bad decisions necessarily. I just think that I don't know what he prioritizes, but whatever he does it in the weird wrong way. That's just, yeah. That's all I got.
Yeah, I agree.
But in the meantime, we need to end this on a high note. So it was a great series. The team, you never know how tired they actually are. Especially with Trevino and Donaldson at a minimum, they have newborns at home. So I can only imagine what they're going through. But Nestor Cortez, absolute gamer. This team cares about each other. They play together. They live and die together through this great game. And yeah, we will see you tomorrow for game one, folks.
Man, I don't know if I'm ready.
Oh God, yeah. Well, it is what it is.
Hey, the good news though is the Rangers look sick. So,
and the Giants are 5-1 too.
Hey, aren't you glad I didn't say anything?
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Follow me on Twitter at JoshBESNY. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You know how to find Alec on Twitter too. Just that was mean, dude. Mean end. All right. Happy ALDS win. Let's watch the ALCS.